Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to refuah shlema for Malka Bat Simcha and to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Vansir, Harab Mir Kahana, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our great questions from our many JTFers, I want to start off by wishing all of our great JTFers Leshana Tova, a wonderful new year. You should have a happy and healthy, and most importantly, a new year that is filled with purpose and with working to make this a better world for ourselves, for our families, for the Jewish people, for the state of Israel, and for the righteous Gentiles. To work to make this a better new year and a better year, and God willing, Bezrat Hashem, to bring Geula Shlema, to bring final redemption for Israel and for the world. And so, again, I wish you the best and most wonderful new year. And let's hope, God willing, that we can accomplish great things in this very important period, in this very important year. And of course, we see the importance of it with the presidential election. We see that we may determine whether or not there's going to be a nuclear holocaust, God forbid, whether or not Iran obtains hundreds of nuclear bombs, whether or not Israel commits national suicide. God won't let Israel be completely destroyed, God forbid. That God will not allow, but the possibility of millions of Jews being murdered, God forbid. There are 6 million Jews in Israel. The possibility of millions out of the 6 million, several million out of the 6 million being murdered, if you read the Bible and you see the prophecies, that is a possibility, God forbid. So there's a tremendous danger, and the tremendous danger to America, and tremendous danger of all types of terrible things happening to America. This is a time of great challenge. Wednesday night, right after the holiday, we're going to have a very important presidential debate. The Republican presidential candidates are going to be debating. Ted Cruz, of course, is the candidate that we're supporting. He's the only candidate that really takes the right positions on the vast majority of issues. And so I urge everybody to pray for Ted Cruz in that debate, to pray that Ted Cruz succeeds and wins in that debate. Very, very important. We also have some news from this week. The great Pastor Manning, who is such a righteous, wonderful person, just a righteous, wonderful, courageous leader in his community being here in New York City, I'm just someone who stands up for the truth, who says politically incorrect things, a person of integrity, a brilliant person, and a brilliant leader as well. Pastor Manning took the video that we did on synagogues. You know, we did a video saying that Torah Jews have to be worried, because what they're doing to Christians, where the so-called gay activists are going to Christians and saying to a Christian baker, for instance, now you have to bake me a gay cake for my gay wedding. I want you to bake me a gay cake. And the Christian baker refused to do it, and he was hit with a huge fine. And then they went to a Christian florist and said, you have to prepare a floral arrangement for our so-called gay wedding. And when the Christian florist refused to do it, he was hit with a giant fine. And now Christian churches are being put out of business because gay so-called activists, these perverted sodomites, are going to Christian churches and saying to them, you have to perform so-called gay weddings in your churches, and the churches are being fined and put out of business. And finally, we saw Kim Davis, the Kentucky court clerk, put in prison because she didn't want to issue so-called gay marriage licenses. This country is becoming a dictatorship of the evil. The evil, the immoral, the politically incorrect, this is like a dictatorship here now. It's been like that, by the way, on issues like blacks and hiring blacks with affirmative action, and on issues involving the Muslims, on all types of issues. We've already had, in effect, a dictatorship where you're fired from your job, where you've got to comply with tyrannical rules. And now it's moved into the realm of forcing people to accept the evil homosexual agenda, which we're not allowed to accept. And I did a video saying that the Jews are also going to be hit by this, that they're going to go to Torah Jews and Torah Jewish businesses and say, God forbid, I hope they don't, but they're going to go to Torah Jewish businesses and say, you have to cater our so-called gay wedding, or go to synagogues and say, you have to have a so-called gay wedding in the synagogue, or else you're discriminating against us. So we're going to have real problems, synagogues and yeshivas, and the Jewish religious world is going to be under siege in this country from these crypto-fascist evil individuals who want to impose their anti-God, anti-Torah, anti-Bible agenda on everyone else and want to shove down our throats their perverted, sick, so-called lifestyle, which is really a way of death. So I did a video on this, and Pastor Manning took the video and put the video on the front page of his news site, which has a lot of visitors. He gets a lot of traffic. And also put it on his very large page on YouTube. He gets millions and millions of views. If you look at all his videos, he has over 4,000 videos on that one page, and he has millions of views. So he put it there, and thousands of people are seeing our message now, and God bless Pastor Manning. That was really a wonderful thing that he's doing, and we're getting publicized all over the place now, thanks to Pastor Manning. God bless him. I also appeared on his program, by the way, last week, and I'm going to be later, after the holidays, I'm going to be, after the New Year's holiday, God willing, I hope to be eventually uploading a video of the interview that I did with Pastor Manning. So, we're in a very critical period. This is the moment of truth. You all know what's at stake. You, the great JTFers, you understand what's at stake. If only we had the resources, we would become a mass movement. There's no question about that. We proved that to you on YouTube when we got 27,000 people to like us. In two or three months, 27,000 Israeli Jews liked us, and that's in Israel, a small country, on an all-Hebrew Facebook page. 27,000 liked us. We had massive activity on the page. We were growing like crazy. We would have had hundreds of thousands by now. We would have been a mass movement by now and I'm saying YouTube, I mean Facebook. I'm sorry, I mean Facebook. 27,000 people liked us on the Facebook page, and we would have had hundreds of thousands of likes on that Facebook page and a huge mass movement by now if Facebook hadn't taken us down. But it was still important. We reached a lot of people, and we proved that we have the capacity to become a mass movement if only we have the resources. If we have the resources, we will become a mass movement. We've proven that over and over again. And so all of us need to pitch in. We need to work hard as a team. We need to try to make a difference. This is a critical time. You know, we're doing Hebrew videos now that explain to the people of Israel, that are getting thousands of views, and that explain to the people of Israel about the American presidential election and why Ted Cruz is our friend and why it's important and why it's a disgrace, it's a chilul Hashem, it's a desecration of God's name, that we have to worry about Ted Cruz and getting an American president elected when Israel has the capacity to take care of the Iranian nuclear threat. The Israeli Air Force could do it. God has given the Jews all of what they need to take care of it themselves, and instead we're put in this position where we have to push to elect an American president who's going to take care of it. That's a chilul Hashem. That's a desecration of God's name, because Israel should be taking care of it. But we know that Netanyahu doesn't have the guts, and there are no Israeli leaders who are about to become prime minister who have the guts. So here we are in this terrible situation where we've got to try to influence an American presidential election in order to prevent the nuclear holocaust. We have no choice. And we've done videos about that, and we're waking up Israelis who are seeing our videos. They're exposed to our message, and that's very important. And equally important, of course, is what we're trying to do on the presidential election front here in the United States. So much is at stake. This is not an election just about, am I going to raise your taxes or lower your taxes? This is an election about, literally about survival, about the survival of America, Israel, Western civilization. This is an election where survival itself is going to be decided in this election. So join with us. It's not enough to just agree with us. We need you to help us. We need your prayers. Please pray for our success in this new year. Please say a prayer for JTF and for our success. And of course, say prayers for Israel and for all the righteous causes and things that we're fighting for. Please pray. In addition to that, when you see us put up Hebrew and English videos, help promote those videos on Facebook, on YouTube, everywhere else possible. Help us promote those videos. Help us reach a lot of people with our message. And, of course, become active on our great news page that Shlomo is doing, jtf.org. If you speak Hebrew, got also on the Hebrew news page, hayamin.org. And if you don't speak Hebrew, then on the English news page, jtf.org, it's a great news page that Shlomo has put together. Make comments and be active and check out the news page every single day. You'll learn something new every single day. Last but not least, of course, the more financial support we get, the more people we can reach. The more people we can get to with our message. It's so essential. It's so crucial at this time. Help make us stronger. The stronger JTF is, the better it is for Israel, for the Jewish people, and for righteous Gentiles around the world. And so help us. We need your help. If you're not someone who has been contributing financially to JTF, starting on this new year, make it part of what you do to make sure that you support JTF financially, to help us financially, because it makes a difference. It really makes a difference. It helps us reach more people. And you know we're telling the truth, and you know we're fighting for the truth. You know that we're saying things that no one else says. It's absolutely essential. Checks, money orders, cash donations sent to our post office box are absolutely essential. And we thank the great JTFers who've been supporting us. Those of you who've been supporting us, God bless you. Those of you who've been sending us checks and money orders and cash donations to our P.O. box, God bless you. God bless you. You've made possible what we're doing, and what you're doing to make this a better world is very, very important. God bless you on this new year. God bless you, and God bless your loved ones on this new year. And, of course, there's some people who would prefer to do it with their credit card, would prefer to do it online for convenience sake. They'd rather not have to put a check in the mail and send it to the post office box. So they'd rather do it online for convenience sake. That's fine, too. It doesn't matter. If you want to put a check in the mail and send it to us, or if you want to do it online with your credit card through PayPal, to us, it makes no difference. Those of you who want to do it online, you just go to hayamin.org. That's hayamin.org, which is our Hebrew main page. And there is a donate button on top. And in several minutes, you can very conveniently do it through PayPal. You can help us through PayPal. So, together, let's fight in this new year. Let's try to make a difference. We're fighting a battle that is absolutely essential. No one is saying what we're saying. No one is doing what we're doing. We are the voice of truth among Jews in this generation. And it's sad that the voice of truth has such a modest budget, but whatever we have, we've got to fight. We're not allowed to be silent. We've got to do whatever we can. That's our obligation. That's what God commands all of us to do. And so let's get in this battle and fight together and fight for this noble cause, so that we can make a difference, God willing. Bezrat Hashem. Okay, let's get to our questions now from our great JTFers. One moment, I just got to move over here. And we start out with Yamash Shmoda Islam, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, did you hear about a mosque in Indonesia destroyed by Christians during Ramadan?" Yes, the Muslims in Indonesia are murdering and raping the Christian minority. And they're forcing Islamization of children. They're forcing Christian children to learn about Islam and trying to convert them to Islam and brainwash them. So the Christians finally had enough. They just couldn't take it anymore. And so they retaliated finally, and they burned down a mosque. At the end of Ramadan, they burned down a mosque. Yes. This is the persecution that Christians are facing in Indonesia. You know, Christians and non-Muslims face persecution in every predominantly Muslim country, even in countries where the Muslims are not the majority, where the Muslims are just a large minority. Christians and non-Muslims are always under attack. That's what Muslims do. Thank you, Yamach Shmoda Islam. We go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, why are Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur the holiest days on the Hebrew calendar? Thanks," unquote. Actually, Joe, there is a day on the Hebrew calendar that is holier even than Rosh Hashanah, the New Year, and Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and that is Shabbat, the Sabbath. The Sabbath day, Shabbat, is the holiest day on the Hebrew calendar. That is the holiest day. Now, after Shabbat, which Jews should be observing, after Shabbat, we do have Yom Kippur, and then Rosh Hashanah. Yom Kippur, because it's the Day of Atonement, because it's a day when we fast, and when we ask our fellow human beings for forgiveness if we've done wrong to them, or try to make it up to them, because you can't just ask God for forgiveness if you've done something wrong to somebody else, to a person. You've got to ask them, you have to ask those, the people you've wronged for forgiveness, and you've got to try to make it up to them if you've done something wrong on Yom Kippur. And then you also ask God for forgiveness, and we try to change, and we change our ways. It's after Shabbat, it's the next holiest day of the year, because of the importance of our being humble before God, because of the importance of our asking for forgiveness, because of the importance of our trying to cleanse our sins as much as possible. And then comes Rosh Hashanah, which is the new year. The new year, we are judged on the new year. Our names are put in the book of life, or God forbid, not on the new year. And the book of life doesn't only mean living in this world, our life in this world. It can also mean eternal life, whether or not we're given eternal life or not, God forbid, in the next world, ba'olam haba, in the world to come. So Rosh Hashanah is a very important period. We are judged on Rosh Hashanah, and then after that period, we have Yom Kippur the following week, and on Yom Kippur, we're judged again. So this is a very critical time, and we should of course be observing, and we of course should be asking God and praying to God for ourselves and for our families, for the Jewish people, for Israel, and for the righteous Gentiles. Thank you, Joe Gutfeld. We go now to Dr. Dan, who is the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, 1, talk about 7 levels of hell. Who gets eternal hell? Unquote. Okay, there are 7 levels of hell, and we are taught that that someone who goes to the 7th level, lo aleinu, it shouldn't be upon us, has v'chalila, God forbid, but whoever goes to the 7th level never gets out, that it's eternal punishment. Obviously, there are many monsters in this world, many very evil and cruel and vicious people in this world who do go there, who do terrible things and who go there. There are all types of categories, obviously Nazis and vicious Jew haters and Amalek, who work to destroy the Jewish people, and Jews who work to destroy their own people, Jews who actively work to destroy their own people, who hate their own people, or Jewish anti-Semites. Individuals like that, their punishment, if they pass certain lines, certain red lines, their punishment is eternal, forever. And the punishment is very, very severe. Exactly what it is, exactly how the punishment's carried out, we don't know. Harambam, Maimonides, says, we don't know exactly how it's carried out. We don't know exactly what's done, but we just do know that there is justice. There is justice. God is a God of mercy, but, you know, you can't have mercy on people that are merciless. People that themselves have no mercy have no right to any mercy for themselves. Sadistic, evil, cruel people. And there are huge numbers of those types of people in this world. Those types of vicious, evil people, they don't deserve any mercy because they themselves have no mercy, and they would carry out the cruelest punishments against the good people if they could, and have done it in this world to the best of their ability. They've tortured and murdered and done terrible things to the good people as much as possible. So they will get justice, and exactly who it is and exactly, that's of course God's judgment, but we know certain things, obviously. Obviously we know that if you're working against God's laws, that if you're working either to spiritually or physically make this a worse world, if you're working to make this a worse world, if you're working to spiritually destroy people by brainwashing them and make them do evil things and push them in the wrong direction, or if you want to destroy them physically, if you want to murder them, obviously those people, and there are huge numbers of people in this world, Muslims, the vast majority of Muslims, and huge numbers of people in this world that are in that category, then the punishment is going to be very, very severe. Dr. Day now writes, who gets reincarnated? Do you believe in it? Unquote. Well, reincarnation is something that most of Chazal do believe in. Not all, though. There is a machloket, there is a disagreement. Not all of Chazal believe in reincarnation, believe in Gilgul Neshamot, it's called. Gilgul. Not all of them believe in it. I do believe in it. I think that there probably is reincarnation. Of course, I don't know for sure. I don't know for sure. But I believe there's something to it. And I'll give you an example of something that Haramban with a nun, not Harambam with a mem at the end, Haramban with a nun, was came after Haramban. Haramban says, when you have a situation, for instance, where a little baby is born and the little baby ends up dying, or where people are born who are mentally retarded or who have all types of severe mental disabilities to the point where they don't even know what's going on around them in the world, to create a soul like that and just leave it at that, just let a little baby die or just let a little child die or just allow these things to happen, it wouldn't make sense within the context, it seemingly wouldn't make sense within the context of them having living only one life like that and not being given another chance. So there has to be a reason, he says, and he believes, he became convinced that there's more than one life because of that. But whether it is or it isn't, we do know that God is a loving God, so even when you have a situation where children die and terrible things happen in the world and there's terrible suffering in the world, we know that God does make it up to the people who don't deserve that fate or who are innocent. We know God makes it up to them. We know God is a loving God. And so whether or not there's reincarnation, there's no question there is justice in the world. Midah keneged midah, measure for measure. And we know that God is merciful. To those who themselves have mercy, God is merciful as well. And again, I tend to believe that there is, that in certain cases there is reincarnation. I tend to believe that there is. But it's a machloket, it's a matter of, there is a dispute about it, but I tend to feel that there is. Dr. Dan now writes, too, what's proper tshuva for breaking Shabbat, Shana Tova? Okay. For a Jew who violates Shabbat, the proper tshuva is to regret having done that, number one. Number two, to promise and decide that it's not going to be done anymore, that the Jew who does that is going to work to start observing Shabbat, and then to actually do so, So first, admission of the sin. Second, admission of the sin. I'm sorry. First is admission of the sin. Second is a deep regret about the sin. And third is committing to changing and not to committing the sin anymore. Those are the three steps that we take on tshuva. Those are the three essential steps we take for tshuva, not only for chilul Shabbat, not only for violating Shabbat, but also for all other sins in Judaism. Now, of course, that's a sin between a human being and God. And those are the three steps we take for human being and God. If it's between a human being and another human being, then we have to ask the other human being for forgiveness, and we have to try to make it up to that other human being if we've done wrong to another human being. And you know, observing Shabbat is a big step for people who have never observed it before, but it's a wonderful thing to do, and it's something that perhaps should be started gradually if someone is deciding to observe Shabbat gradually. Lighting candles, saying the Kiddush, observing certain things, not watching television or listening to the radio, going on the internet, not driving the car, step by step, not doing it all at once, gradually, step by step, getting into it, learning about it. That's the best way, I think, to move into it for someone who's decided to begin observing Shabbat. Dr. Dana writes, if Germany is adamant about Israel to commit suicide by dealing with the Islamic Nazis, why are they accepting so many refugees into their own country? Wouldn't that be suicide for Germany? The same goes for Britain, France, or any other country in the West, unquote. Okay, great question. Well, first of all, they do want Israel to commit suicide. There's no doubt about it. They're doing everything they can to undermine Israel, to fund all the radical left organizations that are hurting Israel, to demand that Israel give up even her own capital, to demand that Israel accept things that are suicidal, to enable Iran to become a nuclear power and have hundreds of nuclear bombs that will be facing Israel. There's no question that they're working to destroy Israel, just as for 2,000 years they slaughtered Jews. All these countries slaughtered Jews, massacred Jews, and until we ultimately had the Holocaust. So the fact that they want the worst for the Jewish people and that they're Jew haters, there's no doubt about that. And again, I'm referring to the governments and the leaders and the nations themselves. There always are some exceptions in every country. There are certain righteous people and certain exceptions in every country. But they're the exceptions, they're not the rule. The rule is that people hate the Jewish people. The Jews are hated for a whole variety of reasons. But why, Dr. Dan writes, well, why are they accepting Muslim Nazis themselves? Well, they're doing it because they think that it's something noble. They want to look noble. And they want to look like they're doing something good. And in Germany, you also have negative population growth. The population in Germany is declining every year because they have more people dying than being born. Very few people have babies in Germany. So they desperately need more workers. They desperately need more people in the workforce. So Germany has a policy of welcoming people into the country because it's a matter of survival for Germany because their population is declining and aging very quickly. But in addition to that, they feel they're a nation of over 80 million people that they could accept a 500,000 Muslims and get away with it, and they need the extra workers anyway, they need the labor anyway, so they feel that they could do it. Now, there are many Germans who don't like it, who don't want this policy and who think it is national suicide, but the leaders have decided that Germany can do this, can absorb them, and that it's something that won't hurt Germany in the long run. That's what the German Chancellor Merkel has decided. Again, quite a few Germans disagree with her and think this is crazy. I think that what she's doing is going to hurt Germany. I think it is crazy. But anyway, from Germany's point of view, but anyway, she's decided to do it. And you know, we have a situation here where you have leaders doing things that are crazy, that are not in the best interest of their country. And that's what you see here. In Britain and France, don't want these refugees. They're deliberately saying we'll accept a very small number. If you look at the number that they said they'll accept, they're very small numbers because they don't want these Muslim so-called refugees. And when we say refugees, they're not really refugees. But these Muslim aliens, they don't want them in Britain and France, so they deliberately set a very small number to try to hold back the huge number that are probably going to wind up forcing their way in and sneaking in. So, you know, they're all in a very difficult situation. They're in a very rough spot, and they're trying to make the best of it, and they're hoping that they can survive this onslaught. They're hoping that this isn't suicidal, that they can survive this onslaught. But I think their policies of allowing anyone in at all are crazy. I think these are crazy policies, and God forbid, I hope that Israel doesn't start doing this. Because there are people in Israel saying that Israel should start doing this as well. God forbid, it would be a catastrophe for Israel. Thank you, Dr. Dan. We go now to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Roxer who writes, and I quote, "Every time a contentious item like the Iran agreement, quote-unquote, comes up, the Democrats stand in unison, whereas there are always some Republicans, quote-unquote, that vote with the Democrats. Explain why this is," unquote. Okay, the reason the Democrats stand up in unison is because all the Democrat politicians are evil and they don't have a problem standing behind something like the Iran agreement. And even the ones that symbolically voted against it, like Schmuck Schumer, that was all a farce. He did it because he knew it was going to pass anyway. He's a liar. He still supports Barack Hussein Obama, supports John Kerry, supports Hillary Clinton. If not for self-hating Jews like him helping the Obamas and the Clintons and the others, they wouldn't have been in office. So, you know, his symbolic vote against it was very absolutely phony. And all the Jewish Democrats who voted against it, there were some Jewish Democrats who voted against it, all completely phony. And by the way, a lot of Jewish Democrats, of course, voted for it. They didn't even pretend. You know, they're completely loyal to Obama and are such self-hating Jews, they voted for it. But in reality, all the Democrats are united behind this evil agenda. There's no question about that. And the reason so-called Republicans are not taking the right stand is because these Republicans and the Republican establishment are evil people too. They're part of the establishment. They've been bought and paid for. They get their money and their contributions and their power from the same establishment that runs both political parties in Washington. This is what Ted Cruz has been talking about. He calls it the Washington cartel. The big money interests, the special interests, the news media, Hollywood, the powerful people, they dictate to Democrats and most Republicans what they can and cannot do. And so all of this is phony. All of it is phony. And the Republican base understands that. And so there is a rebellious atmosphere in the Republican base. The problem is that base, the rebellion of the Republican base is turning to people like Ted Cruz and Ben Carson, who are also phonies, instead of turning to the real McCoy, to the really honest candidate, Ted Cruz. Let's hope we can change that. Let's hope we can get the Republican base to understand the person who will change that is not a left-wing Democrat like like Donald Trump or someone like Ben Carson, who says that his goal is the same as Al Sharpton's goal and is a complete phony. What we need is someone like Ted Cruz, who is a proven conservative with principles. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, explain how the Iran deal obligates the United States to join in a war against Israel if one begins, unquote. Absolutely. The Iran deal promises Iran that the United States and the other Western and other Western signatories to the agreement will militarily protect Iran against an attack on its nuclear bomb-making facilities. In other words, if the Israeli Air Force wanted to go in, under this agreement, technically the United States is supposed to actually militarily defend Iran. Now, that's not, I don't think that that's actually going to happen right now. I don't think that that's going to happen, because that, I think, would be very, very unpopular among the American people. That would really outrage so many people that I don't think that would happen. I think if the Israeli Air Force went in and attacked, the United States would not start intervening in favor of Iran against Israel. Diplomatically they would. Diplomatically they would condemn Israel. And that's why Netanyahu's not doing it. Diplomatically they would, but they wouldn't. They're not going to start having American soldiers fight Israeli pilots in order to protect Iran. But technically, under the agreement, the United States is obligated to do that. And who knows? Who knows in upcoming years if the United States won't actually do something, won't actually commit itself to doing something like that. You know, Hillary Clinton is such a Jew hater, and the self-hating Jew Bernie Sanders, if one of them becomes president, who knows what crazy things might yet come out of this. Which is why, you know, again, it's essential that we influence this election and get somebody in who's going to put an end to this once and for all. And that person, again, is Ted Cruz. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. We go now to Israel Chai, who writes, and I quote, what do you know about Mohammed Nasheed of the Maldives? Well, the Maldives is a small country, I think, of several hundred thousand people. And Mohammed Nasheed was elected president, and he was removed by military force and sentenced to 13 years in prison. This is a so-called Muslim democracy. They elect the president, then his opponents take him out of office by military force and create charges against him and put him in prison for 13 years. That's how you do things in Muslim countries that are so-called democracies. It's all a farce. There are no Muslim democracies, and there are no Muslim free countries. Everything done in an Islamic country is corrupt, backstabbing, and evil and immoral. Israel Chai now writes, if Trudeau wins, Canada will accept Syrians, unquote. Well, I think that Canada already has huge numbers of Muslims, of course. They've accepted a lot of Muslims. Canada is one of these countries that, you know, Canada geographically and physically is larger than the United States. It's a huge country, gigantic. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's the second largest country in the world after Russia, if I'm not mistaken. Geographically. And yet they only have, I think, about 30 million people. I don't remember exactly. I think they have about 30 million people. So Canada has traditionally always wanted to bring in more people because they were very underpopulated because of the cold weather and all other types of factors. They were underpopulated. So they've traditionally had liberal rules, very liberal and flexible rules for allowing people in. Now, Trudeau is a leftist, an anti-Semite also, and a leftist who is running to become the leader of Canada and leading in the polls, unfortunately. And yes, he will accept more Syrian Muslims and more Muslims from all over the Muslim world because he knows that they're going to vote for him. So if he wins, that will happen. We don't want him to win. He is a bad guy, Trudeau. Thank you, Israel Chai. And we go now to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, Shalom. Should the West fortify its borders, seize all assets from Muslim Nazi countries, banish Islam, and deploy the military to secure the oil fields, unquote. Well, let's talk about the United States. The United States should certainly fortify its borders. They should seize assets from Muslim Nazi states, yes. Banish Islam, that would be great. They're not going to do that. They're not going to do it. But, of course, it would be great if they did do it, and it should be done, yes. And deploy the military to secure the oil fields in the Muslim world, that I don't think should be done. That I don't think should be done. And it doesn't have to be. You can put the Muslims out of business by just fully utilizing all of the energy resources of the United States and of Western countries. The United States and the Western world have the ability to produce enough oil and coal and natural gas and other sources of power. They have the ability to do this in shale. They have the ability to do this in a way where you could have enough energy on the market that you would literally put the Muslim oil-producing countries out of business. That would be the best thing to do, rather than to actually occupy a Muslim country and then have your troops murdered by Muslim terrorists. The best thing to do is just to put them out of business, which, again, can be done if we stop the pseudo-environmentalists who are preventing us from exploiting our huge energy resources. And if you stop the special interests who want us to be dependent on Muslim oil, because they're making a fortune dealing with Saudi Arabia and these other Muslim countries, Iran, Saudi Arabia. So they want us to be dependent on these countries, even though it's suicide for the West. Thank you, Khiram. We go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, Indian Muslim raped, impregnated by father-in-law who taped it, unquote. Well, yes, they're not ashamed of it, because, you know, because under Islam, Muhammad himself committed rape. Smash Islam now writes, imams told her to get divorced and consider her husband as son. She threatened suicide, unquote. You know, the sheer brutality of Islam, especially toward women, including Muslim women, the unbelievable sadism and brutality toward Muslim women and Muslim girls is just unbelievable. And what's unbelievable is so many Muslim women and Muslim girls continue to call themselves Muslims, and they're considered to be lower than cattle. They're despised by this evil religion. If they're raped in most of the Muslim world, if they're raped, their family kills the rape victim. The girl who's been raped is murdered. It's called family honor, because the family is dishonored that one of their daughters was raped. The rape victim is blamed, and she is murdered. She's murdered by her own family because she was raped. This takes place all over the Muslim world. It takes place in the state of Israel. Israel, of course, will arrest the people if they find evidence of who did this, but this takes place all over the Muslim world. Very common, and this is what Islam is. And how can any woman have anything to do with it? How can any sane or moral human being have anything to do with such a monstrous religion? Thank you, Smash Islam. And next is Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Shana Tova, Good New Year, your opinion of Reconstructionist Judaism, is it another form of the Deform movement, unquote. Oh, absolutely, and it's not Judaism. The Reconstructionist, Conservative, Reform, these are all cults. These are all assimilationist cults. They have nothing to do with Torah Judaism, nothing at all. They're completely fraudulent, and no Jew should have anything to do with them, any connection with them. They've destroyed huge numbers of Jewish souls. Thank you, Chicago Jew. Next is Uncle Bourbon, who writes, and I quote, What do you think of horse racing? Is it wrong? Do you like horses? Unquote. Well, first of all, I love God's creatures. Horses are wonderful creatures, magnificent, amazing creatures that were created by God. Of course, we love God's creatures. We love animals. Now, I do think horse racing is wrong, because I think it's cruel to the horses, and it's cruel to the people who are gambling. Many people are compulsive gamblers. Anyone who bets on horses is going to lose. I was in prison for 5.5 years for my activities on behalf of the Soviet Jewry, and I was in prison with big mafia bosses who ran gambling casinos, who behind the scenes ran the numbers rackets and ran huge gambling operations. And they would always say, anyone who bets on horses, anyone who gambles in any of our establishments is automatically a loser. Automatically a loser. The rules are always rigged in favor of the house, in favor of... The rules are always rigged against the person who's gambling. The gambler has the rules rigged against them. And I've seen people's lives destroy with gambling. I've seen people become compulsive gamblers, destroy their lives. It's a terrible thing. I'm against gambling, and I'm against cruelty to animals, so I'm against. That's called Tsar Balei Chaim in Hebrew, which means sorrow for animals. You're not allowed to cause unnecessary sorrow to animals. Now, are you permitted to eat animals? Yes, we are permitted to. We don't have to be vegetarians in Judaism. We are permitted to eat animals. But even then, the slaughter must be humane. The animal has to be killed instantly with a humane slaughter. That's why kosher slaughter is humane. And if the animal is not slaughtered humanely, it's not kosher. So we have to be kind to animals. We have to be kind to God's creatures. And of course, I think gambling is a terrible thing. I think that's being cruel to our fellow human beings to have them involved in this vice of gambling. Thank you, Uncle Bourbon. Next is Surgical Jew, who writes, semi-quote, Shalom Chaim. Reason I asked about India last week is I'm going there to see the rest of my family before they make Aliyah. Do you have a message for them? Unquote. First of all, I wish them and you a happy new year, the Shana Tova. And I'm very happy that they're making Aliyah. That's wonderful. A Jew should make Aliyah from everywhere in the world. Every Jew should make Aliyah. And I have some advice, though, for them. The most important thing, of course, you want to be able to make a living in Israel, you want to get adjusted, but the most important thing for a successful Aliyah is learning Hebrew. Learning how to speak, read, and write Hebrew fluently. That is absolutely essential. Absolutely essential. Also important to learn about Judaism, to start doing the mitzvot, but you must learn Hebrew. Learning Hebrew, take the time, spend hours every day studying, and if you don't spend a lot of time studying, and you are not willing to repeat until you learn, you're not going to learn. You've got to learn, and it's very important. Every Jew should learn how to speak Hebrew. Very, very important. Very, very important. And there are programs, by the way, online for Jews who are hearing this who want to learn. There are programs online to learn how to speak Hebrew as well. But very important, learn how to read the letters, learn how to learn the Aleph Bet, and which is the alphabet. By the way, Aleph Bet in Hebrew, that's why we get the word alphabet, because from Hebrew, the Greeks copied letters, and then eventually was copied into English. So our alphabet, actually the concepts of our alphabet were copied originally from the Hebrew. In any event, which is God's language, the Hebrew is God's language, the language the Bible was written in, and the Torah. So my message is learn Hebrew, and that's an essential part of preparing for Aliyah. Kol hakavod. Yishar Koach, more power to you and your family, and congratulations, and again, Happy New Year, Surgical Jew. Now we go to Mr. VSS, who writes, and I quote, Shalom, please discuss the importance of modesty, unquote. Modesty, in Hebrew, tzniut, is one of the most essential aspects. Even King David and Abraham Avinu means Abraham our father, and Moshe Rabbeinu were all very modest. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, was the most modest of all people. Moses was the most modest of all people, even though he had the reason to be the most boastful. He was the greatest. And yet he was so modest in every respect. Modesty is very important because it shows that you realize we're just flesh and blood. We're nothing. Without God, we're nothing. Without God, we can't. You can't survive even several minutes without the air that God gives us to breathe, without all of the things that God gives us. We are completely dependent on God. And so we should be modest. We should understand our limited time in this world. We should understand how small we are compared to the universe, and yet how important we are in the eyes of the Creator. So we should be modest and very grateful to God. But we should be humble. That's one of the bad things about Donald Trump. He's so arrogant, and I'm the greatest, and I'm so brilliant, and I'm so rich. You know, his pride, he said he never has apologized. He said, I'll apologize if I'm ever wrong. In other words, he's never been wrong. I mean, just what an ugly personality this guy has. What an ugly character he has. It'd be terrible to have that in the White House. We need modesty, and we need modest leaders in Judaism. In the Torah and Judaism, even the king is not above the law. Even the king must observe the laws of the Torah. Even the king must bow before God, the real king, the human king, the king of flesh and blood, is nothing compared to the real king of the universe, the Creator. Even the king must be humble before God. So modesty is very important. And by the way, dressing modestly, especially for women, but men too, but especially for women, dressing modestly, covering yourself and not walking around half naked, very, very important for women. Very, very important. Thank you, Mr. VSS. And now we go to EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Can you please provide an update on the situation of the Noam Feldman and the other heroic Jews in trouble? How can we help them?" Unquote. Great question. I assume that giving the money, we have not been giving money to Noam Feldman lately. We gave him a lot of money in the past. We haven't given him money lately because it's my understanding that he actually had a problem. They used that in an indictment that they had against him, the fact that he was getting money from foreign country. They said, "Oh, you're getting money from a foreign country." So we haven't given him money for years now, but if individuals want to give him money, I don't know the address and I don't know exactly how to do it, but if individuals want to, I think helping him financially would be helpful. Helping the other Jews in trouble financially would be helpful. And certainly speaking out and helping us when we do videos on these subjects to make sure that people are aware of this issue, that's also very, very important. We have to help them in every way possible, financially, and we have to help them, of course, and of course we have to help them by spreading the word and publicizing the terrible things that are being done to Jews solely because of their opinion, solely because of their point of view. They're being persecuted in Israel, and it's an absolute disgrace, and we have to speak out. We can't be silent. And so at least, JTF at least, is exposing this in front of thousands of people. I can tell you they are grateful for that. Noam has thanked me for the videos that I've done on his behalf. And other Jews who are in trouble, they are grateful when we defend them and when we expose the fact that they're being persecuted simply because they love the Jewish people and want to help the Jewish people. Thank you, EB22. We now go to Black Sabbath, who writes, and I quote, "The Muslim invasion of Europe is unstoppable. What consequences for Israel does this have?" Unquote. It could have terrible consequences if Israel allows this to happen. Israel has to do everything possible to try to stop this. And we're trying through our Hebrew movement to create an awareness of this issue. Most Israeli Jews agree with us on this issue. They do not want any of these Muslims coming into Israel. And we already have millions of Muslims in Israel. We've got to get the ones that we have in Israel now out and make sure that others don't come in. So there's no question it's a very, very serious challenge and a dangerous situation. Black Sabbath now writes, "What do you think about Margaret Thatcher?" Unquote. I think she was a very tough leader for Britain. I think that she was a very tough and strong leader in Britain. Unfortunately, her policies toward Israel and the Jewish people were not good policies. She was anti-Semitic and anti-Israel, just like all the British leaders have been like that. All the British leaders have been against Israel, very anti-Semitic. And Britain has become an anti-Semitic country and has been an anti-Semitic country for many years. So that's unfortunate, but for the British, she was a strong leader. Thank you, Black Sabbath. And again, I want to wish everybody, Leshana Tova, the best and most and happiest and most blessed New Year. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, God willing, Shalom.